Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back. Folks, we told you we'd be just gone 5 minutes. That was it, just the news and that one short, I'm not sure what we call those. They're not ads, but they're usually, Brent, what do we call those at the end of the last 30 seconds of that 5 minutes? Spots. There we go. I knew they had some kind of radio type title for those kind of things. Anyway, Ed Vitagliano, that was a waste of 30 seconds you'll never get back, as Tim Wildman would say. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. The exhilarating Ray Pritchard is on with us. Ray, tell us a little bit about Keep Believing Ministries and your website.
Well, we are online at keepbelieving.com, online repository of biblical resources, sermons, Bible studies, questions and answers to help people not only understand the Word of God, but know how to apply it to life today in the 21st century. It's all free. Come see us at keepbelieving.com.
All right, now tomorrow is your last day with us for about a month, isn't it?
That's right. So I'm heading north.
That's right. You're heading north to Wisconsin and New Jersey and several other places.
And New York.
And
right,
New York.
The next 4 weeks, yeah. Yeah. Listen, I'm no dummy. When it's this hot down south, go north, right?
Go north. So, folks, if you're in those states I'm not sure where else Ray might be, but go to keepbelieving.org and maybe check out where he's going to be. Maybe if there are openings, you can hear him in person. He is well worth the trip. So anyway, Steve Jordahl has replaced Fred Jackson. Steve is a reporter and news anchor for American Family News. You hear his voice, that golden voice that you hear quite often on some of the newscasts for American Family News. Steve, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All right, so we were talking with some folks during the first hour who've written books and stuff.
Yeah.
So we didn't do a whole lot of hard news, and so now that's your job.
My job, hard news.
Hard news.
Difficult news.
Yes.
Leave it to the professionals.
That's right. That's why we said
that's right.
Brilliant mind has just entered the studio. All right, what do you got?
No pressure. President Trump has put some new tariffs in place with regard to China. He targeted 200 billion more Chinese goods for tariffs. So you look to be paying a little bit more for things like seafood, minerals. Well, he's putting the tariffs on seafood, minerals, chemicals, personal care items, shampoo, consumer products such as handbags, luggage, gloves, and paper. So that's
now, hold on a minute. Let me see. Now, I'm Italian. Most of our listeners know that by now.
Yes.
And so am I going to have to pay more for my hair gel?
You know,
I slick back my hair
Chinese,
some on the side.
The Chinese
depends
will
on
be
how much you're
more.
Paying right now.
That list is what the Chinese will be
personal,
paying more for.
That's personal, Ray, and I'm not going to reveal that. But so health items and shampoo and all that kind of stuff.
The Chinese will be paying more for those things.
Oh, they will.
That's
I'm good with that. Yeah. I'm fine with that.
This is extra tariffs we're slapping on them when they import stuff from the U.S., right?
Yeah, okay.
All right.
So
they're going to be paying more for American hair gel.
All right, that's what I wanted to hear. All right.
Yeah, so anyway, It is something that we're watching. The market has been remarkably ignorant, or at least not paying much attention to this until today. Dan Celia addressed a little bit of this on his program this morning. I grabbed a little bit of that so we could hear what he has to think. Cut three.
It looks like everybody's worried about the $200 billion more of tariffs that's being put on China by President Trump. President Trump continuing to squeeze the communist regime. And look, there's nothing they can do. They say they want to retaliate. They can't retaliate. They're out of money.
Well, there you go.
China's out of money. How are they going to buy our debt?
Well, they own a lot of it already. Yeah. But here, the deal is that the Chinese, being a more autocratic, communist-type country, they control a lot of their economy. They can make it look a lot better than it really is.
Yes.
I think Dan Celia is onto something. And the stock market had been, we've been having a fantastic fundamentals of our economy. Jobs reports, consumer products reports, all of these have been very good and solid. The base of our economy is good. So the stock market has been surging. Today it is floating down. The Dow is down about 200 points today. And the S&P and the NASDAQ are also down somewhere around 0.2%. So not huge drop-offs, but this is after a huge run-up. So we're still doing well, but this is a concern on both sides. So President Trump, Ray, is playing hardball. Basically, the art of the deal here, he wants the trade to be better between our two countries.
Yeah.
That if we're gonna, if they're gonna charge a huge surplus for our items, then we're gonna retaliate and have a surplus on theirs.
Okay, so Steve, go to the next level. Let's suppose so they retaliate against. We've just slapped them with more, and you're saying they're broke. Essentially, they're not. Their economy's not in as good a shape as ours. If they retaliate again, does Mr. Trump come back with yet another round? What's the end game for all of this? Is the thought being, and I'm just kind of working this out in my mind here, thought being, we're just in so much better shape, we can endure their tariffs more than they can endure ours, so eventually they'll have to back down? Is that sort of how this ends?
Yeah, it's basically a game of poker, political poker, where President Trump thinks the U.S. has by far the stronger hand, and he's pushing some chips in, saying, this is how we think we're going to break you of the unfair trade imbalance between our two countries. Not necessarily the amount of goods that are going between the two countries, which is imbalanced, but the way that China adds on taxes to U.S. goods, making it harder to sell them to the Chinese population.
All right.
Well,
so
let me a further question, Steve. Could the Chinese, if they wanted to get even tougher, could they do something to force American companies that are in China out of China, or is that sort of cutting off your nose to spite your face?
Well, they do have the ability to do that, Ray, but to date I haven't heard of that being an issue. What they are doing is they are seeming to target industries and states that Mr. Trump is vulnerable in, or states where there's a they're being shrewd politically about this, and so some of the farm items that they are charging more for are going to hurt, for example, red states a little bit more, some of the farming states. So they're targeting these things, and as right now we hear $200 billion, and I got to admit to you guys both, that's more than I make in a year.
It's more than half. Yeah. More than double.
More than double.
More than double.
More than,
what I
more than double. That's right.
It seems like a lot of money, but in the scheme of things, we're still biting around the edges of our trade imbalance or our trade. So we have a ways to go. I don't know how many more rounds they're going to go, Ray. How many times President's going to up his tariffs and the Chinese going to? But eventually, he's betting that we have more to give. More cushion than they do, and then eventually, and it's worked with other countries.
Well, my understanding is, and then we'll go on to the next subject. I don't want us to pool our ignorance here about economic things. But my understanding is they have entire ghost cities in China where they spent money to build cities. They got nobody to live in them because these cities looked good and it helped their kind of the look of their bottom line. So you may be onto something there, Steve, in terms of the amount of cushion that China has to play with vis-a-vis the U.S. And Donald Trump, I'm sure, President Trump knows that, and that's why he's playing a little bit of hardball. So, all right, what do you got next in terms of stuff that's happening?
Today was to be the day that Lisa Page, the ex-FBI lawyer who was having this affair with Peter Strzok, they're the ones that have been tossing these emails. We've been discovering emails that were exchange between the two that were very hard on Donald Trump. They were very anti-Trump during the election, saying that they were going to stop the presidency and everything. Anyway, she was scheduled to be at a closed hearing today. She was subpoenaed, in fact, to come before the House Judiciary Committee, but she's going to be a no-show. Her lawyer says, no, we're not going to take it there. Tomorrow, Peter Strzok is going to be in front of the same committee, but an open hearing. This was supposed to be a closed hearing.
Right.
Newt Gingrich weighed in on this a little bit last night on the Sean Hannity show. He had this to say when he found out Lisa Page was going to no-show.
You're discovering that at the very senior levels of the FBI and I believe of the Justice Department under Obama, you had a level of corruption that makes it very dangerous for them to show up and to actually testify. And so I think their lawyers, legitimately under our system, are saying to them, to protect yourself, you cannot go under oath and start talking about this stuff, or you're going to either going to reveal information that will put you in jail, or you're going to end up committing perjury. And so I think you're seeing a real example. I mean, it sounds to me like if they didn't have a whole lot to hide, they wouldn't be hiding. And what we're seeing is people who I think have a lot to hide.
In fact, Gingrich compared their showing up to the back in the 50s when Congress pulled in mob bosses and started questioning them, and they'd all plead the Fifth Amendment. And he said it was kind of an indication then, back with Ernest Favre, if anyone wants to go back in their history books, it was kind of an indication of who might be guilty and who might not. So.
Well, listen, Ray, and then I'll flip it to you. That time in our nation's history, bringing those Italian-American businessmen into Congress and asking them questions, that was a terrible time in our nation's history. Honest Italian businessmen.
Honest, hard-working businessmen.
That's right. Being accused, because they were Italians, of having connections to the mob. Tongue-in-cheek, people. I'm just – all right, Ray, listen, I'm glad we had that clip from Newt Gingrich. I had not thought about – the fact that lawyers might be telling these folks you can't go on, because once you get under oath, you might be in danger of revealing something about yourself that could wind you up going to prison or somebody you worked for.
Well, this is another case of one side pushing the other in a way, like what we were just talking about. So she refuses to come. Okay, doesn't want to testify. Then what happens next? What power does the Congress have to compel her to testify?
There is a question about that, and they haven't given any kind of indication of what they're going to do as a next step, but it does have the power. A subpoena from Congress has the power of law. They could send Capitol Police to find her and drag her in or drag her off to jail if they wanted to. I think maybe they're a move or two away from that.
Does Congress have a jail? I'm sorry, I'm revealing some of my ignorance here.
I thought you were brilliant.
Well, no, I was clearly lying about that, or clearly joking, whichever one you want to prefer. But now, I remember that Congress does have a. So, I mean, where would they bring her? I mean, well, they go if they went to arrest her for in violation of a subpoena, refusing to obey a lawful subpoena, the Capitol Police go, because I'm not sure you can't send the D.C. police; they're not under the control of Congress. I'm not sure you can send federal marshals, because those are under the control of the Department of Justice.
So, well, and you don't want a scene where these police are dragging her in.
Against,
I mean, that's really bad optics.
Yes, so, makes her sympathetic. And
according to an article from Time Magazine, which they have their own journalistic issues of late,
yes,
but Congress can hold people in contempt if they obstruct committee proceedings by refusing to testify or for bribing or libeling a member of Congress. In 1821, the Supreme Court ruled that Congress needs the power to hold someone in contempt or else it would be exposed to every indignity. The full House can approve a contempt citation, but it doesn't say... I have to read this.
So they really can't do much. It looks like, to Ray's point, whatever they might do in trying to strong arm someone just blows up in their face. Because Lisa Page then becomes sympathetic, because she's being dragged out of the restaurant while she's eating her sushi, by Capitol policemen and driven over to Congress, and then you got Democrats on the committee who are railing against the Republicans. Boy, it would just look terrible. So I'm not sure what they can do if someone says no.
Let me continue on here. There is a Capitol jail, or at least there was. There's some history backing the threat of putting them in jail. In 1821, the Supreme Court
stood behind
Congress's right to imprison people. The old Capitol jail was once a Washington, D.C. landmark. Most famously, it was used to detain Confederate spies and soldiers during the Civil War era. But that building,
that you're saying that jail is still there?
Well, no, it doesn't exist anymore. At one point, it was a.
There was a capital jail.
I thought I remembered something about that back in the back recesses of my brilliant mind.
Yeah, they might have to put them in some congressman's office and lock them in the room closet
Something. So really, by refusing to testify, they don't. They're not going to really be able to do what we're saying. They're not really going to lock her up somewhere.
No.
So she's got the upper hand at this point.
Yeah, and to the point being made by Newt Gingrich, this is I'm sure on the advice of her attorney, who is saying, no, you've got a Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. So even if they did have some kind of power to compel her to appear, she would just pull a Lois Lerner and say, I'm taking the Fifth Amendment, I'm not talking.
Well, the other thing to remember is that she's a federal employee.
Yeah.
So they can, certainly the government can fire her. She could lose her job.
I'm sure that Congress can't initiate that. She would have to be fired by whatever department.
The FBI, in this case.
So
it would be President Trump's job to fire her.
Yeah, he would have to fire her. All right. So that's that on the Lisa Page front. What else we got?
So I wanted to get into this issue with you guys. We've been hearing some Democratic candidates, most recently this Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who won in New York and is going to be running in November to get a congressional seat. And she calls herself a Democrat socialist, as does Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders. They call themselves Democratic socialists. So I wanted to go over a little bit about what Democrat socialists believe. They believe in a socially owned economy, but a political democracy. So part of the things, Mr. Sanders points back to Franklin Roosevelt, and a speech that he gave in 1944.
FDR.
Did I say it? Yeah, FDR.
You said FRD.
That was to be Mayberry.
Yes, I was going to say that was Mayberry RFD.
Yes.
Yeah.
anyway, he advocated, Mr. Roosevelt, President Roosevelt, in this State of the Union speech, the right to a job, the right to earn enough to provide a good enough job to provide food, clothing, and recreation, the right of freedom from unfair competition, the right of every family to a home, the right of adequate medical care, the right of freedom from fears of old age, sickness, and accident, and the right to a good education.
Now, I like that their freedom from the fear of old age.
Yeah.
How that happens.
Well, that happens when you get Social Security.
Okay. Oh, wow. All right. That's going to be my...
President put some of these things into place, and as you probably don't remember, I certainly wouldn't, but before RFD, families, churches,
FDR.
Charities, golly. Who in the what in the world?
It's in your brain now.
I know. Before FDR, families and churches and charities cared for the elderly. There was no Social Security. And right. I don't know that that's a bad thing. It's certainly poorly run right now, like every other government big program. Yeah. It's losing money.
I put money into it. I want it back.
Yeah, you will probably get it back. Ocasio, she wants Medicare for all, a universal job guarantee. This is the modern social democrat. A tuition-free college for everyone, a federal requirement for paid family and sick leave, housing is a human right, abolishing for-profit prisons, the end of the war on drugs, all drugs legal, demilitarize the police, put them on an even footing with the criminal, I guess I would say. On immigration, she wants to protect dreamers, basically abolish customs. She wants 100% investment in renewable and green energy. She wants a repeal of the Citizens United, which is the campaign fund decision by the Supreme Court, and she wants a national minimum wage of $15.
Hey, all that sounds great to me, Ray. How are you with all that?
Listen, who's going to pay for it? I'm good with all of it. Who's going to pay for all that stuff?
You are, Ray.
Okay, I'm changing my vote.
Yes. I guess when she it was a little confusing there when you first said, you said a political democracy, that part I get, but a socially owned economy, what that has big to government. Mean is big government.
Right. Because government run.
The people aren't going to. So this is. So when we're talking about the democratic socialism, we're not talking about true socialism, which advocates for the abolishment of private property and the government ownership of the means of production and distribution.
That would be communism. And well, they communism separate themselves slash, by that. Yeah, yeah.
Communism. I've always heard in my political science professor said, communism is socialism with a gun.
Okay.
So communism does it through violent revolutionary
but
means.
But political socialism, as opposed to democracy, I think they need private property owners because someone has to make money to pay for all this stuff.
That's the point there with these democratic socialists. You got to have private property because you have to have somebody to take money away from to give it to the government to do these programs.
The feeling is that if you have more, then you should be giving more. And in fact, we're seeing this. It's interesting as we see President Trump over in Brussels and him reading the Riot Act to Germany and France and all these socialist countries. Some of these socialist countries who aren't putting in their full 2% of the GDP to the NATO and other commitments they make, they think the U.S. is rich and can afford to pay more and should because we have more. It's a socialist mindset. It doesn't surprise me
That's
at all.
That's a very good insight. Yeah. Go ahead, Ray.
They're not only happy with us paying what we're paying now, they think we ought to be paying a whole lot more.
Probably.
Well, that is the socialist mindset, right?
That is. It's based on envy. It is. Now, listen, I am in all these kinds of discussions, I am willing to have discussions about, who pays what and how much you have in taxes. I'm not against government. Government does a lot of things. Some things.
It has some legitimate goals.
It has some legitimate purposes. So anyway, that's very interesting. I'm going to want you to send some of that to me via email because that's interesting in trying to figure out what they mean when they say what they say. All right, we were almost out of time.
I want to introduce a new file. I'm going to call this the Oblivious File.
It's like there's nobody else in the world but you.
I don't even know what some of these songs are that you find. Who is that?
That actually is a cover, a lady that's singing a Don Henley song.
Okay.
It's a great song,
by
the way.
Eagles.
It was his one of his solo projects. Anyway, Mrs. Lindsay Dirtle received this letter from PayPal. It says, you have an outstanding balance of 3,000 plus pounds, British pounds. You are in breach of condition 5.4C of your agreement with PayPal Credit as we have received notice that you are deceased. In accordance with conditions, we are entitled to close your account, terminate your agreement, and demand repayment of your full outstanding balance. So they found out she was dead. See, we're not required.
And they wrote her a letter.
They wrote her a letter. Actually, her husband is a little upset about this, by the way. With effect from the date shown, terminate your agreement and require the immediate repayment of the whole outstanding balance. Notify your executors.
Did she write them
we
back?
Do understand. We do understand that you may be experiencing financial difficulties, and we're eager to help.
Oh, man. Great question. Did she write them back?
No.
All right. Well, it's good to leave with a little bit of humor, and that's apparently a automated reply, and anyone who thinks computers and artificial intelligence is going to take over in the next couple of years.
We have a ways to go, don't
that,
they?
We have a ways to go. So, all right, Ray, thanks for being on with us.
Hey, thanks, Ed.
All right, and Steve, thank you for being a brilliant mind here in the studio.
Or pretending to be one.
Folks, more great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. It's been our pleasure to host you on today's issues. Look forward to you joining us tomorrow. See you then.